Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24. He's based in beautiful Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and that's pretty close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. Today, my friend AJ, we have to talk about goalies. There's one guy who's making a reputation for himself, and a bad one at that, and I'm talking about Aaron Dell. For the second time this season, he's been involved in an incident where he's taken an opportunity to hit an opposing player, and this time he injured Ottawa Senators star right wing Drake Batherson. The news came out just before we went to air today that he will be sidelined for up to 2 months with a high ankle sprain, and what a shame, because this guy clearly was having an outstanding season. He's not a dirty player, AJ, but Aaron Dell is certainly carving a reputation for some questionable behavior of his own. He's got suspended for 3 games before the severity of this injury came out. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's so hard, right? Because there's obviously part of me that's like, well, eye for an eye, man, right? Like, if this guy's going to be out for 2 months, you hurt him, like, you should be out for 2 months. But obviously, that's not realistic. It's just not the way things can work. I mean, there'd be so many disputes about that. You'd have to negotiate that in the next, like, CBA, which the players are never going to agree to. So, like, it's just not going to happen. When you consider the fact that he has no suspension history, like, I don't think they would have been able to get away with doing, like, a 6-game, you know, because they have to have the in-person meeting and everything for the 6-game. And then, of course, it would have gotten appealed and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, three feels appropriate. As much as it still seems like really unbalanced and unfair, you've got a guy headed to his first NHL All-Star game, young player, going to be out for 2 months now. And then you have this other guy who's, for lack of a better way to describe it, has been a terrible goalie this season, like takes him out on a bad play in a game where he's probably just upset that he was getting blown out, right? Because they were getting killed in that game. And so it's like, I feel for Batherson, and part of me wants a longer suspension. But when you really think about it, like, dispassionately, like, 3 games feels appropriate.
Well, I think their hands are tied. You make a good point in terms of, you know, are you expecting the goalie to get suspended for 2 months? But really, the penalty needs to be a little more severe than the 3 games, in my opinion, to send a very loud message that we don't want this kind of history repeating. And it goes against my grain, too, because the NHL has done everything to try and protect goalies from players who wander into their area. This guy was outside his crease and moved kind of coyly in order to really upset Batherson while he was skating and not expecting the play. So kind of a cheap wrestling move, I'll call it. And look what it does. It takes a young sniper out of the Ottawa lineup for the next 2 weeks and a guy who was deprived now of his first All-Star appearance. And that's the toughest and unkindest part of this thing that I see going forward. AJ, we also have I'll throw this out at you, and I don't want to go through the roster, but we have seen the names of the the Canadian Olympic teams come out, and there's some players that have some ties to the NHL. We talked about Eric Staal last week and wondered aloud, is this guy going to be – what kind of a role do we see with this guy going forward? He's a 37-year-old player, the only elderly guy on this team. I'll say it's a lot of younger guys. Josh Hosang is a guy who's excited people here in the Toronto area with his performance with the Marlies. Kind of a grab bag of players. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, or by the same token, if you are aware of the U.S., the makeup of the U.S. team. But it's going to be an intriguing mix, I think, on the Canadian side. You care to comment on how they've gone about to build these teams in the absence of NHL players?
Yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that they've, you know, they haven't just completely gone without NHL experience. You know, that they've done the best they can with what's available. And I think so from like a U.S. point of view, I think they did a good job grabbing, you know, some younger guys. You've got, you know, Jake Sanderson's on that team. There's a couple other names that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but I thought they did a good job of getting some younger guys, but also mixing in some more established veterans that I think can offer, you know, a little bit of, you know, veteran presence. You know, an all young team, if you went all young, all like college guys, they're going to get smoked playing over there. You know, most of the Russian team plays in the KHL. And so, yeah, it would just be really tough. So I do like the kind of mix and bringing in a guy like Staal, who, you know, Eric Staal is probably in fit enough condition to play for a month, right? That's all they're asking him to do. You know, I'm sure he kept himself fit and everything. So I love the addition of Staal. I don't know that it's going to turn into, you know, whether or not it'll turn into anything on the back end, like a Justin Williams signing late in the season or whatever, but you know, if he just goes for a month, you know, veteran leadership on this team, I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good choice.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. Can I ask you a soccer question? We never talked soccer yet, but on this
every day, Paul, you can ask me a soccer question. Listen, I'm fine with that.
Listen, Canada plays the Honduras tonight. The Canadian club is shocking the world by being atop the standings in CONCACAF. There's so much excitement north of the border. And we have a game coming up against the United States, too, here that will likely tell the tale in terms of who wins the whole division and qualifies number one from the group. I think Canada's got a chance to advance, but a critical piece is winning in Honduras. The last time they went down there, they got killed 8-1 in one of the most disgraceful exhibitions of Canadian soccer I've ever seen. I tune into these games because
I was going to say that you've ever seen, Paul, that's got to be what? One of like one game, two games?
One of about 30. It's not reams and reams, AJ, but it's still logged in the memory bank as one of the most disgraceful representations of any Canadian team on any level in any sport. And I know Honduras is at the bottom of our table right now. See that? I even used the terminology correctly.
I know. I'm impressed, Paul.
And so that game looms large tonight in terms of the chances for the Canadian club. The U.S., I think you have to say, has been a little bit of a disappointment so far that they aren't at the top of the table right now. But care to comment on that?
Well, if you lose 8-1 to Honduras, you should immediately just deport all of those Canadian players. Like, this team has zero wins in 8 matches in this round. Like, no, you should not lose. They've scored 5 goals in 8 matches. Like, if you lose, just kick everybody out and get a new team.
All right.
AJ. You know, the U.S. has Panama. They're a little bit harder here to go, you know, but I think it'll be a battle for who gets the last spot, and it could come down. You know, it's not the last game, but that January 30th game between the two clubs could be a real key. But obviously, Mexico is not out of it yet. They still have at least one game. I think they've played both games against Canada, but they still have one game against the U.S. left. So it'll be close to see who finishes up top.
Well, I'm all over it, pal. So if we want to do a pod on the CONCACAF thing, you can call me up and I'll try and pull my weight.
Sounds great.
But with that, partner, let's get back to our bread and butter and talk hockey. It's my turn to bat leadoff, and we take the usual deep dive here. So I'll begin with Anaheim, and I got a good look at this club last night as they played the Maple Leafs. They're on a road trip through the Atlantic Division. They won games in Tampa and Boston before they arrived in Toronto. So they've acquitted themselves quite well, picking up 5 points in those 3 games. But I'll tell you what, last night was like a Leaf practice. They barely allowed Anaheim to touch the puck, and the shots on goal were readily skewed at Toronto's favor. And that means that John Gibson must be doing great things, and he certainly is. He pulled off some great saves last night, and I watched the other 2 games. He's been doing that, so he's on top of his game. He picked up 2 wins last week and 7 total goals against a barrage of shots from all 3 teams. Derek Grant is a guy who's picked up some offense for this club of late, 3 goals in the past week, but he's day-to-day now with a lower body injury. Vinny Lettieri is kind of reviving his career a little bit with a nice spurt, most recently picking up 3 points. But the injury bug has crept up and bit this team again and taking away Sonny Milano, who's out of the lineup with an upper body hurt. He'll be missing for the next couple of weeks. Good news in the offing, though, is that Anthony Stolarz cleared COVID protocol, and so he'll be sharing the goalie load with Gibson again. And Adam Henrique, who's been out with a lower body injury since December the 6th, is expected to be back on Saturday. So while they've loaded up the top line, and I really like the look of that with Getzlaf centering the Trevor Zegras on one side and Troy Terry on the other, that's a very nice-looking line. And the number two unit is pretty good, too, with Rickard Rakell and Jacob Silverberg, two veteran forwards. They're being centered by Isaac Lundstrom. He's a guy that I say is a player to watch. And I'm going to be highlighting a few players to watch here, AJ, and maybe you can do the same as we go through the rest of the clubs here today.
Yeah, well, you know, in Arizona, I think the thing to watch is who's going to leave, right? Obviously, you know, they, you look at their roster, they have one, two, three, four, five, six. They have six. Seven, if you include a guy on IR. They have seven players on their current roster who are signed beyond next season, or beyond this season, rather.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're talking about, like, an entire fire sale could be had here. And they already have eight draft picks in the first two rounds of 2022. So, I mean, Phil Kessel obviously is going to draw a lot of interest. They've said, I've seen recently, that they're not going to trade Larson Kraus. He's an RFA, so they're a little less pressure to do that. You have to imagine they'd want to keep Christian Fisher. Like, both those guys are 24 years old. But, you know, does Anton Strålman have some appeal on the market to a team that needs some defensive boosting? I mean, it's certainly possible. You know, I don't think anybody's clamoring over their goalies. Ryan Zingel maybe would offer some appeal. So really, I think that's the biggest thing to watch with this team is who gets sold off and who gets sent away. And then, you know, the other thing that just came out today, Paul, I'm not sure if you saw this, but the Arizona is talking about they've had all these problems with the stadium situation.
Yeah.
And they're talking about moving into the collegiate team's stadium for like 3 years. And last I saw, that has a capacity of 5,000 people. Like, I guess they don't have to worry about not having sellouts. Although with how bad this team has been, I'm not sure they could sell 5,000 tickets. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, we could talk about what they've done on the ice and everything. But there's so much other stuff going on with this club right now. It just feels important to kind of talk about that. And then, you know, like I said, just watch and see who gets sold off because they're definitely not buyers. And they've got a ton of rentals that they can ship out to other teams.
No question. As we get closer to the trade deadline, we'll be focusing on a lot of those names too, AJ. So good for you for bringing up the off-ice stuff because there's a couple of teams we'll talk about off-ice issues as well today, I'm sure. The Boston Bruins are a team that's closed the gap on the big three, I used to call them, in the Atlantic Division this season. But they've closed in on the Maple Leafs and with a 2-1-1 record this past week, putting the heat on the blue and white, as well as Tampa and Florida, to keep going, doing what they're doing atop this division. David Pastrnak leading the charge with 4 goals and 2 helpers last week, just continuing a fine run of play since the turn of the calendar. Charlie Coyle picked up 3 points, and I'll get another note in about him shortly. Jake DeBrusk is also trying to find his way and get back into the good books of the coaching staff. He was a guy that was in the Chateau Bow Wow for quite a while here earlier this season. And Eric Halla is also a guy who will be mentioned in a minute. He's picked up 3 points as well. As the thing about those two, Coyle and Halla, is they've flip-flopped roles. Coyle had the second-line center role. Now he now has ceded that to Halla, and that's an important consideration when you factor in the news that David Pastrnak is on the right wing on that particular unit and thriving there. Of course, Marchand and Bergeron continue to do their bit. Troubling news, though, is Nick Foligno is out of the lineup with an upper body injury. This guy, he signed for big bucks here in the offseason, and I thought he was going to be a key player. They gave him an A as well on the sweater, AJ, and he really hasn't been able to put together a lot of games without being challenged by injury and other issues in his first year in Boston. Also on the sideline, Trent Frederick is out with an upper body injury still, and that's given Oscar Steen a role on the right wing, but he's not the guy that they want there. Ultimately, they got to get Foligno and Frederick back and healthy. Another note, Tuukka Rask has played 4 games for this club, and the early returns are not very positive. 4.29 goals against average, 8.44 save percentage. I guess they're hoping that more reps will get him back in the groove, but I'm not impressed with what I've seen so far.
Yeah, speaking of not impressed, you know, we mentioned Aaron Dell and his issues here. Buffalo went 1-2 this last week. And it's really, you know, some of it is just completely poor timing. Like, I'm sure that didn't go into his head on the play. And, you know, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't trying to injure Patterson, you know, just trying to get a piece of him going around the edge. But now they're down to Michael Hauser as like their only healthy goalie on the roster right now. It sounds like Craig Anderson and or Justin Tokarski might be ready to back up on Saturday, but that's not even guaranteed. And they signed Michael Hauser to an NHL deal like a couple weeks ago because they were in this goalie situation. So yeah, now for his part, Hauser has come in strong, 2 wins in 2 appearances, and faced a lot of puck pressure. It's not like he had this like defensively stout team in front of him that limited shots. We faced 44 shots in the first game, 33 in the second. So, you know, props to him on stepping up here. You know, offensively, they're still getting contributions from the guys that they need them to. Tage Thompson, 2 goals, 2 assists. Jess Skinner, a pair of goals in those 3 games. Peyton Craves picked up 2 goals. Dahlin with 4 points. Like, he's been easily their best player this season, in my opinion. And so, you know, some of the guys that they need production from are doing it, and they do have this kind of next man up, you know, perception here, but they're just not deep enough. You know, you can't just rely on Thompson, Skinner, and Dahlin to score and hope that it's enough. So I really would expect them to maybe sell some pieces here as we head towards the deadline. And you know, Alex Tuch is probably, you know, you mentioned Paul, players to watch. He's definitely the best option here. You know, let's be clear, he's still kind of just getting back to full bore. He's only played 10 games for them this season, but he's got 10 points in those contests, and I would expect him to continue to produce here.
And one thing about him that I'll add is in our Champions League format, and maybe others out there, he's been given access to all 3 forward positions and qualified. So that makes him extremely valuable in the format that I'm involved with. And I think you're in a similar league, AJ. So good value there in terms of his flexibility. And in Carolina, this team continues to rock and roll. They went 2-1 last week. Freddie Anderson, 2 more wins to his ledger, despite giving up 6 goals against. The story is they're flying high and mighty behind Sebastian Aho, who's having an outstanding campaign, picked up 5 points, and he's been reunited with Toivo Teravainen, and he's on a tear too with 7 points in his last 7 games played. And that's part of the formula for success here, but they also really benefited from a couple of things. Seth Jarvis is really enjoying a breakout stretch here and fitting in very nicely in the forward ranks, and has 17 points to his name already in 30 games played. And he's rapidly rising on the rookie league scorers. So maybe we'll hear something about him at the end of the year if he continues at this rate in contention for the rookie award, possibly. But a lot of other names are contributing here. Vinny Trocheck playing great at center in a second-line role. 2 goals, 2 helpers last week. And Svechnikov picking up 6 points on his right wing. So the second line is humming along too. And when you got 2 prominent scoring lines in good shape, that's great news. But Anthony DeAngelo, we have not said a negative word about this guy this year, AJ, and he just continues to pile up the points. He picked up 5 more last week, and that's another big part of the success of this team. They have no fewer than 3 credible scoring options from the back end. Jacob Slavin picked up the Lady Bing last year, and he's continued to thrive in Carolina with a decent scoring total and a shutdown ability at the other end. So very valuable defenseman in him and a partner for DeAngelo. And then Brady Shea all of a sudden has caught fire offensively too, a guy with good wheels and a good hockey sense. And so that gives him 3 quality offensive pieces, and you round it out with Brett Pesce, another solid top 4 type defenseman. And that's a great, great core that they have developed in Carolina. It's no wonder they're near the top of the league.
In Calgary, things have been going extremely well of late. They've got the offense firing on all cylinders, especially their top line. For the month of January, Matthew Tkachuk is averaging over 2 points per game. In fact, just this last week, in their 3 games, Tkachuk had 3 goals, 6 assists. Johnny Gaudreau with 8 points in those three games. Noah Hanifin with 4. Elias Lindholm, 2 goals and 1 assist. So their top guys are producing at an astronomical level right now. They're getting really good goaltending, too, out of Markstrom here. You know, he had in those three games had 2 wins, 1 loss, a 9.32 on the save percentage there. And that includes a shutout performance just last night. And so, you know, Calgary really looks, you know, yeah, you look immediately at the standings, you see that they're in fourth. But when you dive into this a little more, first thing to note is they've only played 38 games. That's 5 fewer than Los Angeles, who's only 2 points ahead of them. You know, it's 5 fewer than Vegas. And if they won all 5 of those games, they'd actually be ahead of Vegas in the standings. So, I mean, this is a top 3 team for sure right now. And the other really, there's like 2 other things that are really of note here. They have the best goal differential in the Pacific Division at plus 32. So they're like I said, they're scoring and getting great goaltending. And then they've only played 14 home games. They actually have as many away wins, 14, as they do total home games played because of, you know, COVID cancellations and all that. So not only do they have games in hand, but they have home games in hand. So this is a team that's going to be, I think at this point, they look like they're going to be in the mix for the top of the Pacific here, at least pushing, you know, Vegas for that top spot right now.
In Chicago, the Hawks went 1-2-1 last week. And AJ, the biggest development for me is that Dylan Strome is getting a run as a top 6 forward finally. And he's taken full advantage of it. He's produced 4 goals and 2 assists last week. They've split up DeBrincat and Kane, but it didn't stop them each from producing. DeBrincat with 4 points last week and Kane with 3. So that's good news too. Brendan Hagel is a guy that's picked up the slack by flipping positions with Kane, picked up 3 points. So the top 6 is looking really good for Chicago. And I want listeners to keep an eye on Sam Lafferty, a guy that you got to look at as a former Penguin. He's now given the right wing role in the second line beside Taves and DeBrincat on what looks like a very interesting combination of players here and could thrive. And with Strome looking good with Kane and Hagel, like I said, that's a great looking top 6 to me. In the Nets, they got some issues there because Kevin Lankinen will miss a couple of weeks with a hand injury and is replaced by Colin Delia, who had a look at the big leagues last year with very little success. So a lot of pressure on Marc-Andre Fleury to keep doing what he's doing to keep this team afloat.
For the Blue Jackets, a 1-3 week, which really shouldn't come as a surprise when you consider, you know, really their offensive struggles throughout the season. Really, they have been, you know, towards the bottom of you know, goals per game and for a lot of the season. And so they're not getting particularly strong net minding either right now. You know, in his one appearance this last week, Jonas Korpisalo gave up 4 goals on 30 shots. That's a sub 900 save percentage. Elvis Merzlikens was a 9.30 on the save percentage in his 3 appearances. So the goaltending's not there. The offense isn't there. And they're going to lose one of their better players here, at least for, you know, a couple of games. Alex Texier suffered a hand injury. He should be out probably through the All-Star break. You know, he was struggling of late. He had missed 4 games previously and had just 1 assist from coming back. But before that, when you go all the way back to late December, he was off to a really strong start to the year, had several multi-point games over that stretch. So, you know, a very good start to the year, kind of derailed by that first 4-game absence. And then, you know, that was related to COVID-19 and then comes back, struggles to really produce, and now has this injury that's going to keep him out for a couple games. So kind of bad news for an already struggling team.
Well, we can't call Colorado a struggling team this year at all. They are currently on an 8-game win streak. Darcy Kemper fitting right in, running things in the Nets now with 3 more wins to his ledger with 6 goals against last week in total. Nate McKinnon with 3 assists last week and into last night before he suffered a facial injury. We haven't really got a conclusion on what happened there. I saw the incident, AJ, where he was involved in a check where his own stick was wound up being pressed against his face and clearly did a lot of damage. There was a lot of blood on the ice, so I would imagine a broken nose was part of the deal, possibly, but no word in terms of the extent of the hurt. He did miss the rest of the game. It happened on his first shift of play in the game against Boston last night. Mikko Rantanen didn't miss a beat last week with three more points to his record. Ditto for Gabe Landeskog with four. They'll be tasked with running the show here if McKinnon is injured at all, and it could result in Nazem Kadri moving up to play with them, and that might make a second-line center really an important consideration. And right now, Alex Newhook could get that role. He's listed as third-line center at the moment, so you'd expect him to move up. Curiously, though, Tyson Yost, I was digging around thinking, what's happened to him? He's now relegated to right wing on the fourth line duty. If that's not a signal that this guy's career is in trouble, at least in terms of continuing in Colorado, I don't know what else to tell you, because everything else is good news here among the forward and defense ranks and in the Nets. So he's got to take a look in the mirror saying, do I want to be a part of this juggernaut, or what do I need to do to pull up my socks? But that's the lingering question right now for him.
In Dallas, a four-game win streak for them on the back of Braden Holtby with three of those victories. Again, similar to Calgary right now, really rolling, you know, Rupe Hintz, four goals, four assists, Pavelski with 8 points, Robertson with 7 points. So Dallas looking really, really strong right now, which is honestly going to complicate things for them as we get closer and closer to the deadline, because for a while there, it looked like, you know, we're potentially going to see them be strong sellers here heading into the break. But Braden Holtby, whose name has been linked as a possible trade piece, you know, he's having a good season. He's on just a one-year deal. So if Dallas is out of it, do they move him? You know, he's obviously not their goaltender of the future, just based on it, on his age. They do have some concerns right now. You know, Faxa is dealing with a non-COVID illness. They've got Jacob Pettersson had a positive test, but then two negatives, so they're not really sure where his status stands. John Klingberg has an upper injury. But as of now, none of these are reported to be long-term injuries, so hopefully they won't miss too much time. But, yeah, all signs pointing up suddenly for Dallas after having previously kind of been thought of as, you know, a selling team. You look at the standings, they're 7 points back from fifth. So it's going to take a stretch of wins here to get back in the mix, but they're certainly showing they've got some fight left in them.
Yeah, and Detroit for a while had dreams of participating in a race or a playoff spot in the Atlantic Division. But I think with Boston's recent surge, you can book it. We know the four teams that are going to get out of this group, but that's not to say that there aren't encouraging signs in Detroit, despite going 1-2 last week. Robbie Fabry is caught fire a little bit with 5 points in his last five games played, now listed as a right wing on the second line. That's because they reconfigured the units a little bit. Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi have been split up. They've both continued to score like crazy. Bertuzzi picking up 6 points last week, but Pius Sutter could be a guy that benefits from Bertuzzi dropping down to the second unit. And then news in the offing is that right wing Jakub Vrana is finally almost on the verge of rejoining this club and making his season debut. He was acquired in a deal last year at the trade deadline, if you'll recall, AJ, and was thought to be a fixture in the top six here, but his start has been delayed because of a shoulder surgery in the offseason, and he's slated to debut. He'll get a top six role as soon as he does, sometime in February. We'll watch for that. Other good news from the infirmary is that Thomas Greiss, their experienced goalie, I'll say, beside Alex Nedeljkovic, he's coming out of COVID protocol, so they're going to have a better structure and better depth in the Nets as soon as Greiss comes back. He was a guy that performed heroically last year for the Wings in the face of a lot of rubber and figured to have an easier time this year, but he's had a bit of a run with injuries and COVID this season so far.
For the Oilers, if you need proof that two guys alone can't, you know, completely carry a team, especially when neither one of them is a netminder, you look at the fact that while they were without Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in six games that he was absent, they went 1-4-1. The goals for was like 2.43. Really struggling to provide any sort of offense without, you know, kind of that you know, more depth piece, if you want to call Ryan Nugent Hopkins that. So really indicates very strongly how much, you know, just two guys can't get it done here. And, you know, that's been the case for Edmonton for a couple of years now, that they have these two powerhouses guys in McDavid and Draisaitl. And in order to get wins, they need some guys around them. And so they are starting to get that. Ryan Nugent Hopkins played on Tuesday night, picked up an assist in that game, had four shots, plenty of power play time, like exactly what you want out of him. He's playing on the top line with McDavid and Kyler Yamamoto. They're going to get Zach Hyman back tonight as well. He had missed the previous three games while in the COVID protocol. So suddenly a really thin forward group that was, you know, had two stars and a kind of a bunch of scrubs around him, for lack of a better term. Sorry, guys. Suddenly has some producers back in that can help this team. Now, they look like they're probably not going to have Tyson Barry tonight. He missed Tuesday's game. This will be his third straight game without playing here, though he has been stuck in a 7-game pointless streak of his own. Just really getting healthy is kind of the key here. I know, Paul, in the past, you know, me, I've dogged on Mike Smith pretty good, but I don't think Mikko Koskinen is the answer to not having Mike Smith available. So getting Mike Smith back eventually at some point this season would certainly be a step in the right direction. Right now we have him projected for a mid-February return, and hopefully from an Edmonton fan standpoint, that's not too little too late.
But they'll also have to address their goaltending issue going forward. And I think the dots will be connected with the Toronto Maple Leafs at some point. They have a certain goalie who's not played too much this season, has a cap hit of $3.8 million that will probably not be a part of the Toronto scene next year. And if he performs well in the second half, I could see those dots connecting, at least in the offseason, if not sooner. In Florida, partner, Maxime Menin must think he's died and gone to heaven. He gets the plum assignment now of moving up to right wing on the top line alongside Alexander Barkov, who's having another fantastic season. I think this guy is finally starting to get his due as one of the top pivots in hockey, and he's helped Carter Verhaeghe since he arrived there, and Verhaeghe now a fixture among the top six, is completing that top line. Jonathan Huberdeau and Barkov used to be tied at the hip here, but early last season, these guys were split up, and it's really benefited the roster, and it's benefited other players too, because they've pulled up their socks and contributed their share of offense as well. Sam Bennett, a trade acquisition from Calgary, has looked really good at center here ever since he came on. And the guy who's benefited as well is Anthony Duclair, a player to watch for the rest of the season, on the verge of eclipsing his career highs already as a pro. And that means that he should be a lock for something in the order of 60 to 65 points if he continues at this pace. And that'd be an outstanding season for him and a great looking top six when you consider that. But one guy who's not participated in all this is Owen Tippett. Been a bad year for Tippett's. He's related to the coach of the Edmonton Oilers, of course, and both of them having subpar seasons. Owen Tippett, formerly a first-round draft pick, now toiling on the fourth line here, and that's not good news for him.
Well, we'll mention with LA the big milestone tonight, as Drew Doughty is set to hit game 1,000 for the Kings tonight. He'll be the first player from that 2008 draft class to hit 1,000 games here. So kudos to him. Obviously, was taken second overall, right behind Steven Stamkos, who has dealt with some injury issues over the years, which have limited him to not quite being right there. But he'll, I'm sure, get there sooner rather than later. So kudos to Drew Doughty there, who continues to basically turn back time. 21 points in 24 games this year, 9 of those coming with the man advantage, and clearly the key piece from a defensive side. This week, offense has been a little lacking. 1-1-1 is the record for this last week. They averaged just 2 goals per game over that stretch, and Alex Iafallo with 3 points kind of leading the way for them. I think the other, you know, thing to mention for the Kings tonight, they are going to get a big piece back. Andreas Athanasiou is set to play for the first time since December 14th. He's had an extended stint on the sidelines. That was his second IR stint this year already. So injuries have really plagued him, has left him with just 11 games having played so far this year. 6 points in those contests. I don't know that I would necessarily be sticking him in my DFS lineup tonight. I'm not totally expecting him to jump immediately back onto the score sheet here. But somebody to watch if he got dumped in, maybe you don't have an IR spot in your season long league. And he got dumped by somebody that didn't want to wait it out. If he's available, might be worth picking him up just to see if he can kind of turn it on going forward.
Minnesota is a team that's turned it on for a while, AJ. Offensively, they got all things going. They went 3-0 last week. Kaapo Kähkönen, 2 wins and 5 goals against in his ledger for the last seven days. Another Foligno, Marcus Foligno, makes the news with a 4-point week. He's had a very nice year, probably the best one in his career to date, and kind of factoring into the top 9 forwards there on a regular basis. And they're chock full of talent up there, where we used to talk about defensemen all the time. Now we talk all about their forwards. Kevin Fiala is one of those guys that has been a contributing forward for a while, chipped in with another 4 points last week. Ryan Hartman continues his career season, best season, with 2 goals. Matt Zuccarello continues to show why I keep saying he's one of the better playmaking wingers, with another 5 assist week. He also chipped in a goal. Kirill Kaprizov, their signature offensive piece. This guy's a skating highlight reel, with 5 more points for himself. And Greenway picked up 4 assists as well. So that's a bunch of forward chipping in. But Alex Goligoski was a throwaway from Arizona that's finding his groove back on the defense in Minnesota, and is a couple of seasons removed from being one of the better point getters among blue liners. And he just adds to the wealth that they have back there with Jared Spurgeon and company. Spurgeon chipped in with 4 points as well. In terms of better news around this club, Cam Talbot returned from a 6-game absence with a lower body injury, and Jared Spurgeon has 7 points in his last 4 games played, but that was interrupted by a 7-game stint on the sidelines with a lower body hurt. So this team's strong, but they're getting healthier with the return of Talbot and Spurgeon, so better watch out when you got these guys on your schedule.
Well, one team you don't have to watch out for on your schedule is the Montreal Canadiens, 0-1-2 this last week. A lot of this has to do, I'll give them a little bit of a pass here. A lot of it has to do with kind of just unfortunate injury and COVID-related issues. I mean, you look at the infirmary ward here, you've got, obviously Shea Weber pretty much done for his career. Carey Price hasn't played yet. Matthew Perreault dealing with an injury. Joel Edmondson appeared to have kind of a setback with his back problem. Jonathan Drouin, Brendan Gallagher, both out. You've got Cole Caulfield and Joel Armia are actually here in Madison skating because they couldn't cross the into Canada yet due to COVID quarantine issues. So they're practicing here in Madison at the UW here. And then, of course, Christian Dvorak suffers a concussion the other night and now is not going to play tonight either. So, I mean, some of their problems have to do with this, just lack of a lineup here. I mean, you talk Dvorak, Drouin, Paul Byron, Gallagher, Armia, like that's almost a top six on its own. So it, at some point you have to give them a little bit of a break. Samuel Montembeau dealing with a wrist injury. So they've been using Caden Primo as the starting netminder here. He's winless in 5 games this season, but, 22-year-old netminder being kind of thrown to the wolves. He faced Colorado and Minnesota in his last 2 games. Like, of course he got shelled, right? Minnesota could be better if they got healthy, but I don't think that's going to solve all their problems. I just don't see this as a playoff team, that's for sure.
I needed to pause there while you were talking at the end, AJ. I'm getting all choked up with all this bad news about Montreal, so I needed a second to regroup. The New Jersey Devils, a team that is turning a corner, I think. They were 1-2 last week, but the youngsters are chipping in and developing. Jesper Bratt is having a career season. 4 goals added to his marks last week. Damon Severson is a guy that I got a lot of looks at when he was in the AHL, and he's proving that he's a serviceable offensive piece on the back end with the fact that they have been missing their linchpin back there for much of the season. Dougie Hamilton has not factored in regularly owing to health issues, but Severson has certainly done his part with four helpers to plug the gap here. Dougie Hamilton missing the last seven games with a jaw injury. He's back at practice, traveling with the team as well. So the news could be good in terms of the near future and his return. And if Severson can continue to perform at this level, then the Devils have a really cornerstone on the continued upswing that is hoped for by their fan base. They have a new look among their top six at forward, too, that we can spend a moment on. Jimmy Vesey, who was a third and fourth liner the last couple of seasons, they bounced around the league a little bit, getting a look at the first line left wing position here alongside Nico Hischier. And Thomas Tatar, a guy who has found that New Jersey is not like Montreal. And he didn't have to go there for me to tell him that, but it's not working out for him on the ice at all like it was in his time with Montreal. And maybe a turn on the first line is the tonic that will revive him a little bit. Yegor Sharangovich and Jack Hughes, they've been carrying their load consistently for about the past year when they've been healthy. And Jesper Bratt is rounding out that group. So they got a better looking second line, if you will, than the first line that we got listed at RotoWire headquarters. But hopefully the two young centers can drive things there. And PK Subban is a guy that I expect to be moved at the trade deadline, AJ. It requires some team to eat up a little bit of, take a little bit of salary on if they want him in the lineup. But he'll come cheap next year, I think, and it'll behoove him to play his best if he gets traded to a situation that that is better than the one that he finds himself in New Jersey right now. In the Nets, the two starting goalies at the beginning of the season, Blackwood and Bernier, are out of the lineup right now. Blackwood is a guy that they pinned their hopes on for the future, but he's had a recurrence of his heel injury. In the meantime now, the goalie role will be front and center with John Gillies, a guy who was formerly a high draft pick and has bounced around a little bit, and he's got a chance now to revive his career in New Jersey.
Is there a guy this season who's more flying under the radar, at least as far as I've noticed, than UC Saros? Like, you're talking about he leads the league in games played for netminders at 36. He's tied with Tristan Jarry and Andre Vasilevsky for wins at 23. Like, this is, the save percentage right on par with those guys, 926, which, is right ahead of Vasilevsky, tied with Jarry. I mean, really only trails Igor Shesterkin. And yet, despite all that, he actually comes in fourth on the looking at, futures odds for the Vezina Trophy over at our friends on DraftKings. Comes in fourth at plus 1,400. Like, that seems like a decent bet to take a flyer on here, because he's right there at the top of every category in the goaltending situation right now. If this guy plays, 60-some games and racks up 40 wins, he at least should be in the mix. So to get, plus 1,400 value seems like a really good spot to be in. He started all three of their games this past week for Nashville, won them all, getting some offensive support from guys like Matt Duchene, who continues to have a rebound year. He had three goals and an assist. Luke Kunin with two goals. Forsberg with 4 points. Roman Josi continues to just tick away helpers. Three of them this last week for him as well.
The New York Islanders, AJ, Ilya Sorokin has got two wins and three goals against last week and one shutout as well. He's come as good as advertised. There was a lot of talk about him before he landed in North America, and he's really looked every bit the part as a top goalie prospect and the guy that will probably hold the bulk of the responsibility here for the foreseeable future. Brock Nelson is a guy, they count on this guy to be a regular scorer. He was quiet in the first half, but I think he's starting to get in gear, and we saw a four-point week out of him. And with him and Barzal both finding their groove, both having slow starts, the future of this team is bright. If these guys can continue to do their part, it's so key in this NHL that you have to have your scoring line centers producing, and these guys didn't at the start of the year. They are right now, and it's making a difference in the way the Islanders look. They're also waiting for Kyle Palmieri to come back in the lineup. This guy's been nursing a lower body injury for several weeks, and he's been practicing for a couple as well, but he's still not ready to play. They're not really saying what's up with that, but there has to be a Spockian eye turned in his direction when he's been practicing for a while and yet not making that next step. Ryan Pulock, though, is a guy who was ready to exit COVID protocol, and they can't wait to get their top defenseman in back in the lineup. You should see that very soon, I think. And in terms of disappointments here, though, there are a couple. And they are line mates on the third line here. When you consider J.G. Peugeot has disappointed in a third line with only 11 points. He signed for big bucks when he came here. And the thought was he would do what he did in Ottawa before that. And really, this year, it hasn't been the case. And you can say ditto for Parise, his left winger, who has only 12 points in his 35 games played to date. You expect more from both of these guys than what they're delivering. And you can only imagine the fortunes of this club. If the centers can stay healthy and perform and these third line pick up their act, the Islanders will once again be a tough out in this league.
Another team that's going to be a real tough out is the other New York club, and that's the Rangers, 2-1 this last week, led by Chris Kreider, who becomes the first player in the league this year to reach the 30-goal mark. And, hey, let's continue with long-shot bets over on the DK Sportsbook, Paul, that that makes some sense here. Chris Kreider plus 1,000 to lead the league in goals. I mean, he is right now, and we're halfway through the season. So, I would take that value there as well. Obviously, the favorite probably always is going to be Alexander Ovechkin. Auston Matthews not far behind. Draisaitl, McDavid rounding out the top four before we get to Kreider. So I certainly would take that. And some of that comes from this last week. He had 5 goals in those 3 games, with 4 of them coming, or 3 of them rather, coming with the man advantage. And the guy feeding all those pucks to him is Mika Zibanejad, Artemi Panarin as well. Both of them picked up 4 helpers this last week, and also added a goal for a total of 5 points. So they're getting a ton of offense right now. I already talked about the fact that Shesterkin is right there in the mix at the top for Vezina candidates. They're relatively healthy right now. They don't have Kaapo Kakko, but, you know, to be honest, he hasn't really been doing a whole lot the last couple of games. You know, he's goalless in his last 12. So offensively, I don't think they're really missing him. Philip Chytil, another guy who's out, has been a little bit more productive as late. He had 4 points in his last 7 games before getting hurt. So really, I would call these almost minor pieces right now that are kind of affecting their lineup. And as long as they've got, you know, that top line of Kreider, Zibanejad, and Panarin rolling with how good Shesterkin's been, and then obviously Adam Fox on the back line, this team is not going to be easy for anybody to get by, and should at least – you know, it's a tough metro that they're in. They're leading it right now. That you know, is going to face challenges from Carolina, from Washington, from Pittsburgh. But they should at least be in the mix here as a playoff team.
In Ottawa, they are a ways away from being a playoff team, but they're building in the right direction, AJ, and it's because of a lot of youngsters. We mentioned Drake Batherson and his unfortunate injury. He was having an all-star campaign, had 2 goals and 1 helper last week, but we'll be missing for the next couple. And the better news, Matt Murray is back in the lineup. He's played in 5 games and allowed 14 goals against since returning to the roster in the beginning of January. So those are encouraging early returns for a guy that's on the club for a big ticket. So it's nice to see him starting to kind of earn that money a little bit. And they'll need him to do so if they hope to continue that upward trajectory. They have some issues with injuries on the right wing with Batherson out and Connor Brown out with a jaw injury. He's already missed 6 games and his return is scheduled for mid-February. That affords a couple of guys a chance to look good on the right wing on a scoring line role. And the opportunity right now is with Tyler Ennis. He had a nice run last week with 4 points, including 3 goals. And Zach Sanford, who has moved up and down this roster, just as he did in St. Louis. These are the 2 scoring line right wingers for the time being, and they'll get a pretty good run. So keep an eye on their production going forward. Tim Stützle's experiment at center is going well. He's got 5 points in his last 5 games played. And young Alex Formanton is another youngster that's making the grade as a top 6 forward, picked up 4 points last week. So they've got a lot of pieces there that they're integrating into this lineup. And it's good to see some positive offensive early returns here.
There's not a whole lot of positive returns going on in Philadelphia. a 13-game winless stretch. That means they have yet to win a game in 2022. The last victory came against Seattle in December 29th. So a tough start to the new year for the Flyers. And kind of two things going on here. As far as Claude Giroux, their kind of signature player goes, on one hand, you're hearing trade rumors, and I think that's tied to the fact of where his contract situation is. Obviously any player that's heading into the in the last year of a deal is going to be tied to a potential move. But then their GM just came out yesterday and said that they have started discussing a new contract. Whether that comes to anything or if he gets traded, we'll have to wait and see. But obviously things not going right if they're in a position to even being discussing the possibility of trading Claude Giroux. And really, that there's blame to go around everywhere in terms of guys not producing. You've got, James Van Riemsdyk has been in top six roles for them. He's got one assist this last week. They've got injuries that are a factor as well. When you consider, Sean Couturier is potentially going to miss the rest of the year. They're waiting to see on that. Ryan Ellis is likely done for the year as well. They're both kind of in the same boat. Broussard's been out. Kevin Hayes has been out. So they're trying to get by with what they have, and a couple guys that should maybe be stepping up where they haven't been. And then the goaltending situation has been disappointing as well. And you know what? I don't even really want to put much of the blame on Carter Hart. I know it's not like me to spare a Flyer for something, but you look at his goals allowed in his last six games, it's 2.67. Like, you'd think he'd pick up a win over that stretch, right? Like, maybe they could have put some offense against Buffalo or, Columbus, to drop to Columbus 2-1. Like, that's not on Carter Hart by any stretch of the imagination. So, it's unfortunate that injuries have put them in this spot. I don't know when their next win might come. You look ahead, Kings, Jets. I mean, they've got two games against Detroit in February after the All-Star break. Maybe they could pick up one of those, but it's not going to get any better for the Flyers anytime soon.
All right, partner, we reached that point where we're going to have you wait with bated breath till you get the chance to talk about your Penguins. And we're going to take a break from running through all these teams and come back to our listeners. You're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ, and we'll be back right after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back. And before we go further, let's have a reminder for a way to reach out to our listeners. AJ, remind our folks how you get in touch with you and me.
Yeah, we always love to encourage everybody to reach out to us on social media so that we can, you know, interact with you, whether it be questions about your teams. You know, if you want to talk soccer, we'll talk soccer with you as well. We've obviously got Olympic hockey coming up on top of, NHL hockey. So we are always available to talk about a wide variety of topics. As Paul mentioned, you can follow me at AJSchulz24. That's AJSCHOLZ24. And you can follow Paul the Statsman at Statsman22. I'll spell it for you just in case, STATSMAN22. We would also, you know, if we get any really good questions, happy to share those and discuss them on one of our future shows as well.
Great. Well, AJ, I'm going to briefly talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can fill in the blanks that I'm sure I will omit. They're currently on a 6-game winning streak. Tristan Jarry led all goalies with 4 wins in a busy schedule last week, allowing a total of 9 goals against. The firm of Crosby and Malkin is reunited, and this team is flying in formation behind them, and all kinds of good news to report. Over to you, pal.
Well, I'll take the bad news to report there. Teddy Bluger suffered a broken jaw, and I cannot for the life of me figure out why this play wasn't penalized. Brendan Dillon basically checks his face into the boards, resulting in that broken jaw. I don't understand. He left his skates. If you watch the replay, left the ice rather. I have no idea what the league looked at on that and said, that's not a penalty or that's not a suspension. Like, I have no clue. So I've obviously been pretty frustrated by that lately. You know, Teddy Bluger is not, you know, the top of our lineup, but really helps with the depth, gave the Penguins like a third, fourth line that's really hard to compete with. Fortunately, Brian Boyle is available and has stepped in. So been pretty frustrated by that. And then obviously the big news that came out yesterday, Jeff Carter signs a new 2-year, $6.25 million contract extension with the Penguins. I think this is a great deal for a guy who really has come in and done really well with the Penguins. You're talking about 37 points in 50 games wearing that Penguin jersey. That's really solid production. It's not too far off. And, you know, look, the contract that he is coming off of was a huge, huge contract signed, you know, back in the days when you could dole out those big ones. It was an 11-year, $58 million contract. So he's actually taking about a million and a half, about a $2 million reduction in salary. And I think that's, a good value for a guy that has been phenomenal with the Penguins right now. Obviously, you never know when Father Time might step in and slow things down, but clearly the move to Pittsburgh has been good for Jeff Carter. And I'm perfectly happy to have him back for 2 more years.
Well, let me interject for a second, say I think it's a bit of an overpay, AJ, based on the birth certificate. I agree with you. The guy's done everything and more since he arrived there, but it could be a Patrick Marleau kind of a deal for me, the way Marleau started with Maple Leafs and then just went MIA in the latter part of that deal. That could be the situation, and that's a lot of money to hide if that becomes the case. Certainly, I don't wish him anything but the continued success. He deserves it. He's been a great pro for a long time, and like you said, he's been thriving in Pittsburgh. So I'm a little bit more skeptical than you, and time will only tell which of us winds up being correct there. So it'll be food for fodder on the upcoming years of the podcast, and I'll look forward to being a part of that. I hope you do too.
And I look forward for you to be wrong, Paul, and that you were wrong about your take on that. And Jeff Carter has been a great addition for the Penguins at this point. I'll lead us in then and talk about the Seattle Kraken. 2-2, the record last week. Philip Grubauer taking 3 of those games. They are going to get Chris Driedger back. He will be off the COVID protocols and ready to back up. I don't expect him to really be in a huge position to factor in the starting mix just because his numbers have not been great this year, especially his last five outings before ending up in that COVID protocol, went 0-4-0, 3.31 goals against average. So I think they're going to ride Philip Grubauer pretty heavy here in terms of the work share going forward. Obviously, some concerns on the blue line with Jamie Oleksiak and Carson Soucy picking up injuries. But overall, you know, this team just, unlike Vegas in their first year, I just think this team's not quite deep enough to really compete. You know, Ryan Donato, Alex Wenberg, Jonas Donskoy as the third line. That's maybe a light third line. Kelly Yarncrock, Yanni Gord, and Mason Appleton is definitely wouldn't be, I don't think, a second line on a lot of teams, at least a lot of the good teams in the league. So they're just not deep enough, in my opinion, which I think is fair to have expected this year. And I'm not surprised that they're struggling. I didn't think they would be in the bottom of the Pacific. I will say that. I thought that they had enough pieces here to maybe compete a little bit more. A lot of that has to do with Grubauer, who is coming off that Vezina Trophy nomination, has absolutely not played to that level this year. So you obviously would need to see more there. But, I'm not shocked that they're not, you know, winning. But I also, again, didn't expect them to be at the bottom of the Pacific either.
In San Jose, this club went 1-2 last week. Aiden Hill is now listed as day-to-day with a lower body injury. That means that James Reimer gets the primary goalie load to himself for a little bit. In terms of more negative news and more serious negative news, Erik Karlsson was having a bit of a revitalization of his career this year after a couple of down seasons. He's now sidelined until mid-March with a forearm surgery that took place recently. And so that's a tough blow for their defense, and it'll be reconfigured a little bit. Radim Cimak moves into the top four role here as a defense first role player against alongside Mark Edward Vlasic, similarly cast. So Brent Burns is the guy that's going to carry the mail here offensively, just as he has for much of his career, but he's without his top teammate in that regard, and that will weaken this team significantly, I do think. Noah Gregor is a player to watch on the top six among forwards here. They've reconfigured things, and he will get to play alongside Thomas Hertl. And Hertl, for his part, you might look at it on the surface and listen to this comment saying he's had 6 points in his last seven games played, but the fact is those six points came in two games. He was blank in the other five. And similarly, Logan Couture has only 1 point, one goal and two helpers in that same span. Look, just as I said earlier with a couple other teams, New Jersey being one, the Senators have to drive the offense in a lot of cases. And these guys have done it much of their careers. They're not doing it right now. And any success that San Jose has to hope for going forward has to revolve around these guys getting their act together and being more consistent as the veterans that we know them to be.
In St. Louis, the news is between the pipes here as Ville Husso, you know, for all intents and purposes right now, Paul, looks like he's taken over the number one job. He dealt with an injury in early December, suffered an injury, spent, you know, a number of games on the sideline, nine games on the shelf. Since then, he's started, five of six games for them. And the one game he didn't start was in a back-to-back, and they had to bring him in relief of Jordan Binnington, who had given up six goals at that point. I believe it was six, possibly seven. But Binnington has not looked good. Yeah, it was seven goals allowed on 35 shots in two periods for Binnington in the most recent outing. And you have to wonder, is Husso going to steal this job from him? It certainly looks like it right now. He had started three straight. Then they decide to give him a night off because it's a back-to-back. He comes in anyway. They're going to use him tonight as well. And really has outplayed Jordan Binnington at this point since returning from injury. And will try and stake his claim very similar to the way that Jordan Binnington did with Jake Allen when Binnington first kind of broke in to the league and had an outstanding second half to the season based on when, you know, the timeline of when he came into the league, stole the job away from Jake Allen. And now it seems like it's happening to him as well.
Well, and you can say that COVID is the wild card here too, because before COVID, he was doing okay, Binnington was, but since his return, like you said, things have not been the same. The goals against is now bloated significantly. And otherworldly from what the rest of his career has looked like. Husso, for his part, is doing this at the right time in his career. He's on an entry-level contract that expires at the end of the season, and there'll be a lot of people clamoring for his services, even though he's an RFA, that this should be he's a UFA, AJ. So St. Louis already has Binnington on the books for the next several years at $6 million a year, and Husso will be a free agent coming off a $750 hit that will rise significantly if this guy continues the run that he's on that you pointed out quite rightly. So a future for him looks bright. In Tampa, this is a team that is a two-time defending champ. We talked about all the offensive stars here. And of late, though, there's been some troubling news in the injury front. Eric Cernak with a lower body hurt and Jan Ruta with an undisclosed injury. That means that a third of their defensive component, the three pairings, is now on the sidelines, and that's tough news for them. Corey Perry was getting a run as a top line winger. He's back to a third line role here now. Russ Colton with three goals pacing the offense. You don't see that every week. And Mikhail Sergachev outpointing Victor Hedman is good news once in a while, too. Hedman has had an outstanding season, but they want to see Sergachev take the next step. And really, he's had a quietly effective year, but certainly, his captain's grabbing all the headlines among the defensemen there. That with the rejigging of the forward units, they also have suffered a blow with Nikita Kucherov being diagnosed with COVID. So their wing position looks different on the right side. Anthony Cirelli made the switch over from center earlier this year, and he's been a very good defensive conscience in the top six, so that Braden Point and Palat can do their thing on the top line. But Matthew Joseph is pressed into duty with Kucherov being a sideline and Cirelli moving up to the top line. Joseph now gets a second line scoring role, and he's not cast well for that role here too. So you see a bit of a weakening of the offensive core of the Lightning, which we're not used to talking about, but it bears watching going forward. So see how they manage with Kucherov out of the lineup and see if they can get through with two of their top six defensemen on the sidelines, partner.
I'll run through the numbers real quick for Toronto. 2-0 this last week. Mitch Marner on a four-game goal streak. Morgan Riley with a goal and two assists. Willie Nylander, same goal and two assists. And that's kind of the basic stats for the last week. Paul, I'll let you run through the why, how, and where it's going.
Well, the top news here with this club is they've rejigged their format of the forward lines. They've got Willie Nylander playing on one line, Marner and Tavares on a second, and Austin Matthews on a third unit. Matthews is being flanked by a couple of guys who were surprising contributors to the top six. They've exceeded my expectation. I'm talking about Michael Bunting and Andre Kasha. Bunting, for his part, is among the top rookie scorers. He's not a 18 or 19-year-old. He's been bouncing around the NHL for a little bit, but he's really thrived on Matthews' wing, and he gets his nose dirty. This is one of those guys you love to have on your team, but is a real pest to play against. And Andre Kasha has found a way to stay healthy, which was his bugaboo over the last couple of seasons in Boston and before that in Anaheim. He's had a very nice year in Toronto, although he has missed a few games. He's put together a pretty nice season here. Both of these guys really worth the bargain basement salaries that they were signed to. And you can say ditto for Ilya Mikheyev, who returned to this roster finally after missing the first half season. And he's been on a tear since then. And he's in for a nice new payday as well. He probably won't do it in Toronto, I don't think, because I don't know how they fit in a salary increase with him, as well as Jack Campbell in the Nets, who's had an outstanding campaign. Other news in the Nets, Peter Mrazek is ready to take a regular turn, and I'd like to see it be a regular turn to boost his value around the league and also the Leafs' fortunes, because I don't want them to drag a tired Jack Campbell into the postseason. This could be a real good situation for the Leafs, that they have two rested goalies, two experienced goalies to count on when the serious shooting starts. So I'm feeling pretty good about things in Toronto, particularly if Jake Muzzin comes back from the concussion protocol that he's in right now, and Timothy Liljegren, his injury is not deemed too serious, then we can have a look at the six healthy Leafs defensemen that I expected to be a part of the situation, finally getting a run as we get into the second half of the year. Up next, we'll talk about the Vancouver Canucks, who made some headlines off the ice by hiring a European scout, Swedish-born, and a female assistant general manager this week. The names of these people are not as important as the story behind them, folks. They're experienced people who have made the grade and kind of are forcing the NHL, at least in one of the 32 teams, to look beyond the old boys network. And that is great news for any aspiring person who's really putting in the time and effort to make their way into the league. There finally looks like there's a crack in the door. And certainly Vancouver, you got to give Jim Rutherford all the credit in the world for making this opportunity and directing traffic in this way. I can't wait to see the returns for this club. They've got a lot of talent on the ice, and we'll talk about that for a second now too. Elias Pettersson is a guy that his season has not been up to par with the earlier season in his career. He's only got 22 points in 42 games played, but I like what he's doing lately, and he's showing signs of being the star caliber guy that these guys in Calgary need to drive the bus here. 5 points in his last five games, and he's doing it from a different position, though. He's playing wing alongside JT Miller, who I think gets a lot of credit for surviving the doldrums that this team has gone through and finding a place for himself to be a signature player on this team. And another guy that's kind of floundered early on, but finding his way at Brock Besser. So that's the new look on the top line. And unfortunately, Bo Horvat is not in the mix offensively here. He's dealing with the COVID protocol. So he's another guy that was, like Miller, kind of carrying the flag here, but he'll be sidelined for a little bit. So that opens the door for a couple of guys to take a run at a scoring line center position. And so it'll be a battle between Jason Dickinson and Juho Lomikko to see who can be that second line guy for at least the next week or so. My money's on Dickinson for the time being. Nils Höglander will be on his left side, but a player to watch, I think he's miscast in this role, but we'll see what he returns. And that's Alex Chiasson, who's been more of a bottom six guy here. I'd rather see Matthew Highmore getting the role than Chiasson, but who knows? Maybe they're going for his physicality in that situation. On defense, I think they have to be disappointed with the role that Oliver Ekman-Larsson has played here. We used to talk about him as one of the top scoring defensemen in the league, AJ, and this year it just hasn't materialized. He's got only 7 points in 39 games played. That's a massive disappointment for a guy who still should be in the prime of his career at age 30, and I'm so glad that my favorite club didn't take a run at him when he was available last season as well. He was a name that was rumored and linked to Toronto, at least locally, and so I'm glad that Matt Kyle Dubas turned away from that possibility, given the returns that we're seeing here.
For Vegas, a really solid week, 2-0-1, and they on the back of Robin Leonard, two wins over that, including a shutout performance. Shea Theodore with three helpers plus a goal over that stretch led the scoring in those three games for all players. Willie Carlson, a goal and an assist. So not a ton of offense, but when you've got Robin Leonard pitching shutouts, you don't really need a lot of scoring right now. Some of that comes from the fact that they still are without Max Pacioretty, who's been sidelined since December. Alec Martinez is still out and has been since November. It does seem like those guys are getting close to being back. And then obviously they're anxiously awaiting the return of Jack Eichel. So I think this team's going to rely on the net minding for a little while here, just because they are missing some crucial pieces in terms of offensive production. And a guy like Evgeny Dadonov, who I would like to see more out of, just one assist in those last three games. So you would hope to get some more production out of him. Mark Stone is just one game back, so I'll give him a little bit of a break. Obviously, no points in that return from COVID protocols. He was doing pretty well before that happened, been in and out of the lineup due to injuries and other issues. But when he does play, Mark Stone's been really productive. So give him another game, and maybe the offense can start getting going. But obviously, Pacioretty would be a key piece to get back for them to move forward, at least on the offensive side of the puck. But fortunately, like I said, they haven't really needed it, with Robin Leonard playing some solid goaltending of late.
AJ, we're talking about 32 teams, and at least once during the season, all of them go into a bit of a slump. And that seems to be what's happening in Washington. This past week, they went only 1-3. This despite the fact that they have their 1-2 punch back at center, and if Evgeny Kuznetsov and Nick Backstrom, it looks like they flipped again. Last week we said Backstrom was the center for Ovechkin, but the lineups that you and your buddies at RotoWire headquarters have put together show Kuznetsov with that plum assignment, along with Tom Wilson riding shotgun as he has with Ovechkin for much of this season. The key opportunity that I see is Daniel Sprong on the second line with Nicholas Backstrom, one of the best playmaking centers in the league, should be something that Sprong looks forward to in this opportunity. Connor Sheary is a guy that's played top 6 minutes a year before and in Pittsburgh in a prior stop. So more of the focus for me will be to see what Daniel Sprong can come up with. And Lars Eller deserves some recognition for being a guy that supported the vacancies and filled in the vacancies, rather, when both of these pivots were missing earlier in the year. So they have a really nice depth at center, and now it's intact and looking like it should have been at the best of times, and hopefully they can keep it this way going forward. On the blue line, they've had a serviceable year out of Dmitry Orlov in support of John Carlson as two offensive pieces from the back end, and that's pretty standard around the league. But Carlson has quieted it down a little bit offensively from the pace that he set last year. Still one of the top defensemen in the league, but now we're not talking about him as much in the same breath as some of the guys that are current contenders for that Norris Trophy. In the nets, Vitek Vanacek is healthy. Ilya Samsonov has not been. And so the hope is that they can get a good run out of both of these youngsters the rest of the way, and they can stay healthy to bring some more some soundness and some backbone to this team, and maybe have them find their way, because maybe they're pressing offensively because there have been some issues in the nets. And now that they're straightened away offensively, we'll see if we see the best of the Caps going forward.
Well, for our last club, as we go through the breakdown here, we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets, winless in their 5 straight. And look, if there's a guy in this league who would ever get close to like playing 70 games, which I really don't think will ever happen again, but it's got to be Connor Hellebuyck. Like he has played in 26 of the team's last 28 games and is going to start again tonight. That'll be 13 in a row for him. The obvious downside is that all those losses that I talked about, those 5 straight losses, are all on him. He gave up 3 or more goals in 4 of those contests. You know, the offense hasn't been great either, so he's not getting a ton of support. You know, you look during that stretch, 3 goals was the most that his team scored. He had 3, 2, 2, 2, and 3 again. So, you know, you want more from the offense here as part of it. Kyle Connor continues to roll, 2 goals and 1 assist in this last week. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois had 2 goals, but not getting enough out of some of the rest of the lineup here. So, but yeah, look for Connor Hellebuyck. You know, if he can get some wins put together here, he'll definitely be in the mix for most games played at the end of the season.
And AJ, now we turn our attention to the DFS portion of our program, where you bring us your best lineup in DraftKings, and I do the same on FanDuel. Tonight, for me, I lean on a couple of lopsided matchups that I see on paper, and I'm going to be doing a couple of stacks in my lineup. I'll save the details for a bit, but I wonder what your strategy is ahead of tonight's slate of games.
Well, my kind of main strategy here is to look at the look at the New York Rangers, and they have a really good matchup tonight going up against the Columbus Blue Jackets here. So I think they're in a really good spot to maybe get some serious production out of them. And so I really like, you know, kind of the top half of their line here. And so I'm going to go with center Mika Zibanejad, 7,500. He was on an 8-game point streak until their most recent contest. I think he'll get back rolling again. And he's just been feeding the puck to Chris Kreider, who, as I mentioned, is on a 5-game goal streak right now. 6,300 for Kreider, which is really cheap when you consider what he's done production lately. Pairing those two guys, you obviously have to save a little money. So my other center option is Sam Steele. And now this is a high-risk play. There's no doubt about it. Steele was on a 27-game goal drought, but finally got on the scoreboard last night against Toronto, picked up an assist as well. So I think a matchup with Montreal is probably the best thing for him right now, after kind of struggling to get going. But he's kind of, you know, he had that 2-point night, and I think this could be another good night for him. Do I think he's going to, you know, be a consistent scorer every single night? Probably not. But you pick and choose your spots. So at 2,500, yeah, you know, he could absolutely throw up a zero on DraftKings tonight, but he could also get another goal. And if he's rolling, I think it's a good opportunity to use him. So I mentioned that Chris Kreider kicks off my wingers. I'm going to stick with Matthew Tkachuk for Calgary as another option, 6,200 for him. I used Tkachuk last night. The Flames beat Columbus 6-0. Obviously, a little bit more concerned. The only reason I'm not stacking Calgary tonight is because they're going to use Ville Husso. So I have a little bit of a concern there. But Tkachuk has just been so good lately, basically unstoppable, averaging about 2 points per game. Actually, it might be more at this point. He's got 22 points in his last 11 contests, so 2 points a game. 9 of those are goals. So I like him. 6,200, again, is a good spot to be in. It's not too high, not too low. And then my third option here is going to be a bit of a toss away, sort of. Cole Perfetti, 3,300. The Winnipeg Jets have a really good matchup tonight going up against Vancouver, who's had some goalie issues with Demko and Halak having been in the COVID protocol. So they're going to roll with Spencer Martin tonight. He's looked okay. He faced 50 shots from Edmonton on Tuesday, gave up 3 of them, and got the overtime loss. So it's not like he's been bad, but obviously this is, you know, a pretty much untested NHL-level goalie. So Perfetti's on the top line with Dubois. So I'll take a risk at 3,300 and grab him. For my utility spot, I'm going to use a guy in a similar position, and I'm going to look at Edmonton. Again, the matchup with Nashville is not great, but I spent a lot of money at other spots, so I needed to save up here. Kyler Yamamoto comes in at 2,700, gets to play with McDavid and Nugent Hopkins tonight. Again, I mentioned that this offense is much better when Hyman and Nugent Hopkins are in to support that main cast. So Yamamoto playing with two of probably their three best players, and it's a good spot at 2,700. Again, both Yamamoto and Perfetti are certainly not cash game plays. I probably wouldn't use them in a cash lineup. But for a GPP, if you can get them to catch, I think it's a good spot. Defensively, I did spend up here starting with Adam Fox for the Rangers, 6,400. It's just too good of a place for the Rangers tonight, too good of a matchup. And then I'm going to use Tony DeAngelo. Paul, you highlighted how good he's been of late. He's on a 5-game point streak right now, 6,100. Is his price tag. Now, originally, I was hoping to use Igor Shesterkin between the pipes. I might still consider Alexander Georgiev, but I'm not as confident in him. So for now, I'm going to pivot and use Tristan Jarry, 7,900 for the Penguins going up against Seattle. They're playing at home. That's a good matchup. I still like the fact that the Rangers are playing Columbus, and Columbus is really struggling. But I have significantly less faith in Georgiev than I would if Igor Shesterkin was between the pipes.
Well, I'm so pleased to hear you at least pick Jarry in the Nets as a contingency player, because I was getting concerned there that we have a game night featuring the Penguins against a lesser team and you wouldn't have any of them in the lineup. I was shocked with that development. But you know what? There is Pittsburgh representation in my roster, and that's one of the stacks that I'm using tonight. So in a bit of a turn, I'm the guy that's going to talk up the Pens in terms of the DFS play tonight. And I'm going to begin with Evgeny Malkin at center, AJ, for $6,800 on FanDuel. I'm curious to know, maybe you can look it up while you're on the DraftKings site if you get a chance. But $6,800 for a guy who's better than a point-per-game player since he returned to this squad, and the team is on fire. I mentioned on the DraftKings show, reluctantly, I had to say, that this is the hottest team in hockey right now. And I'm surprised you didn't go there as well. But they've been fantastic for the past 6 weeks and maybe even beyond that. But Evgeny Malkin now in the fold and looking for more performance out of him. And so $6,800 committed there. I pair him with the most expensive guy in my lineup, and that's Sebastian Aho. So I've got a really nice 1-2 punch in center. Aho gets a very nice matchup against Ottawa. in the Canadian nation's capital if they can get by all those trucks that are on their way there. And then I round out my squad with a four-pack of wingers that I'm pretty confident in. Toivo Teravainen, and I've always liked this guy in DFS play. Whenever I get a chance to pair him with Aho, I do it. And so tonight they're going to be line mates. And Teravainen comes in for $6,600. And I will round out that line with Seth Jarvis, who is a guy that I covered in the early part of this broadcast, is a rookie who's starting to make waves and really fitting in on that top unit. He's only $4,900, so that's one line. Then the other line I've got is the Penguins line around Evgeny Malkin. It looks to me like Danton Heinen gets the role for $4,900 on one wing and Kasperi Kapanen for $5,000 on the other. So two cheap line stacks, I'll say cheaper than I thought they would be, and I managed to fit them all in. On defense, I'm going to go with Jacob Slavin. I said this guy has had another nice season on the back end in Carolina. They score a ton of goals, and I think he'll be in on some of the scoring plays this evening in Ottawa. And I round up the squad. I have to go elsewhere for somebody. I pick Mikhail Sergachev, who's on a nice run in Tampa of late, outscoring, as I said, all defensemen, including the guy named Hedman, over there over the last couple of weeks. And for $5,100, I'll plug him in as my wild card on this roster. And then in the nets, I'm also making a bit of a leap here, hoping that Jonathan Quick can continue his run of play over the past couple of weeks. He's had seven starts, six of them have been quality efforts, and much of the season he's been well under the three goals against mark. He's just hovering around 2.5 per game. The Islanders struggle to get 2.5 goals per game. They're the opposition tonight, and so Quick is my pick for $7,300. That rounds out my squad that I'll put into action this evening. AJ, I'm surprised you didn't go with the Penguins. I thought that against Pittsburgh, that would be an interesting thing for you to pick away at.
Yeah, I thought about it. I obviously, wanted to build my lineup for when we were doing our DraftKings show earlier today. And so I've been talking the Penguins a lot lately, so I want to give another look. And I do really like the Rangers matchup, so I am going to stick with that for now. Now, Paul, you asked me to look it up. Evgeny Malkin, about $100 cheaper on DraftKings, $6,700 is his price tag, so not too outrageous. And I do have a follow-up question for you. It's actually going to be Cal Pettersson between the pipes tonight for the Kings. Are you going to stick with Pettersson, or does his presence in the lineup sway you to maybe go with a guy like maybe Connor Hellebuyck is right in that price range? You could go crazy and go with John Gillies up against Tampa if you really want to go contrarian pick. What's the play there, you think?
I think I'm going to go with a veteran then. And that bit of news, I'm going to go with Connor Hellebuyck in the Nets to round up my squad. So thank you very much for revealing that. And I'll make that pick and plug him in right away. And AJ, with that brings us to the end of our show. And another deep dive into all 32 teams, but at least we had a full slate of games to talk about this past week, so the point totals were significant across the board, and plenty to talk about in terms of people with new roles and new opportunities that we always think is the best value that we give our listeners on this show on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I think, the one thing that I covered Edmonton for us, so I forgot to mention this, is it sounds like by next week, we will have, probably even later today or tomorrow, we'll have to talk about Evander Kane being a member of the Edmonton Oilers. Everything seems to be pointing in that direction, that Kane isn't going to face any sort of suspension from the NHL for some travel COVID violation stuff in the AHL, and that he is going to sign with Edmonton within the next, next couple of hours, next day or two here. So we'll have to talk about that more in depth next week.
Well, that's big headline news, and thanks for at least teasing it. We'll dive in if it gets more conclusive between now and next week for sure. So with that, we tie up a bow on the Statsman and AJ podcast, a podcast for our RotoWire listeners and fans everywhere. We hope you enjoyed it. And in the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJScholes24. And we invite you to listen to the podcast to get our tips to stay ahead of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.